The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, welcome everybody to the Lakers Legacy Podcast, where you're a wizard, Harry, and you just lost to the Lakers again. So take that wand and shove it up your Western Conference standings, because my God, is the West brutal this year. Expecto Patronus, more like expecto play-in-us, because that's unfortunately where it seems like the Lakers will stay. But let that not take away from how well the team has been playing recently. The Lakers are now 44-33, 11 games above 500 for the first time since May 15th, 2021. They wrapped up their most recent road trip with a 5-1 record. They are now 8-1 over their last 9 games. And after beating the Raptors and Wizards on back-to-back nights, the Lakers have now won their third straight complete back-to-back set, and have one last set to go this weekend at home versus the Cavs on Saturday and then the Timberwolves on Sunday. The Lakers are 4-10 on back-to-back sets this year, and if they want a shot at the 7th or 8th seed, they'll have to make that 5-10 after this weekend. As things currently stand in the brutal West, the Lakers are 1.5 games behind the Kings for 8th. Technically, they're only one game behind, but because the Kings have the tiebreaker, it's 1.5 games back. The Lakers are also 1.5 games back from both the Pelicans and the Suns for 7th and 6th, respectively. The Lakers only have 5 games to go, while the Suns and Pelicans both have 6 games. And with the way these other teams are currently rolling slash not rolling at the moment, it kind of looks like the Lakers' best shot at the 7th or 8th seed is hoping that the Pelicans continue to tumble. The Ingram-less Pelicans still have to face Wembanyama, the Suns in Phoenix, the Kings in Sacramento, and then the Lakers at home on the last day of the regular season. The Lakers currently lead the season series against the Pelicans 2-1, but they will need to cement things against them in that final game. So yeah, final standings could literally come down to that last matchup between the Lakers and Pelicans, so buckle up. On today's show, this is going to be another classic stopgap kind of episode because all of our schedules have been quite busy recently. So today we're not going to be talking about the Lakers' close to the road trip or AD and LeBron's stellar recent play being as locked in as they have been. Instead, the main topic for today's show will revolve around arguably the greatest three-point shooter in Lakers history in D'Angelo Russell. And we're going to talk about his future with the team this summer, what a new contract for him might look like, and what the Lakers should do about the rest of their roster if he returns. So stay tuned for that. And after the break, I'll also provide you guys with some updated Lakers team stats to keep things fresh and relevant. So once again, welcome to the Lakers Legacy Podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Hernandez, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tommy Alexander. Tommy, to kick off today's episode, your non-basketball-related icebreaker question of the day is, what is a staple go-to spot for good eats or drinks that you like to frequent near where you live? When you have a particular craving, what's a spot that you have pinned?
Yeah, there's like this sort of hole in the wall Mexican place near us called El Amigo. That's just like amazing Mexican food.
Oh, okay. It's not like a taco truck. It's like an actual brick and mortar.
Yeah, brick and mortar.
What do you get there that's so amazing?
I usually get a carnitas burrito, but they're like massive and you can get them like wet with like green salsa on top. It's like so good, dude.
Okay. What was it called again?
El Amigo.
El Amigo. Okay. I got to check that out. For me, I live in the SGV Pasadena, so I can kind of span Temple City, Arcadia, Alhambra, Monterey Park if I want to. But I like to frequent this place in Alhambra on Main Street, like downtown Alhambra, called Borneo Kalimantan. It is a Singaporean Malaysian food place, and they just have... I was more of a Thai guy before. I had never actually tried like Singaporean Malaysian food, but it's actually very similar to Thai food. But yeah, just super flavorful, and they have this Malaysian iced coffee. It just hits you like crack, whether it's the caffeine or the sugar and condensed milk that they put in there, but it is amazing. So if you're ever in Alhambra, check out Borneo for amazing Malaysian Singaporean food. And if you like chicken satays, they have some of the best chicken satays I've ever had, even apart from Thai food chicken satays. Speaking of chicken satays, let us chicken sachet over onto our Apple rating and review podcast reading of the day. As usual, we will be having our impressionist extraordinaire Tommy Alexander channel one of our players or coaches. And for today's reading, Tommy, I want you to channel everybody's favorite minute watch player, a player who's actually been playing pretty well recently in a more contained role. I call him under 24 minutes, 24 and a half minutes now. That's his new nickname. But for this review, please channel Torian Half-Blood Prince.
This review is entitled The Friendliest Lakers Podcast by Mr. T-Squared. These guys are the most fun-loving and good-natured podcasters in Lakers fandom. Some podcasters know basketball X's and O's better. A lot of podcasters are more angry, but none are more friendly and supportive of our Lakers. 5 stars today and every day.
Whoa. 5 stars today and every day. Thank you so much for that review. We've been getting a lot of like, we're friendly guys reviews recently, which is great. I feel like that just makes us sound like we're the Sesame Street Lakers podcast, but I'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it. I will say I agree with this review, and thank you for recognizing this. If it wasn't extremely clear to everyone, this is not an X's and O's podcast. This is a fun podcast.
This is a fun, lit, friendly podcast, okay? Speaking of which, Tommy, I felt like you really nailed down Torian Prince's vibrato. What went into your channeling of Torian Prince right there?
I was imagining how good it would feel to play less than 24 and a half minutes in a game. And how much energy I would have to read a review. And that's what I went with.
There you go. That was perfection, because in that 2 minutes that you read that review as Torian Prince, guess what? You put up 9 points and hit 3 threes like you would if you read that review in 35 minutes. I don't know why you would read that review in 35 minutes. But anyways, let's move on. Thank you. That is the Apple Podcast review of the day. Please give us a rating and review on the Apple Podcast app. Give us 5 stars. If you can't do that or don't use the Apple Podcast app platform, please go on Spotify and just hit the 5-star dial at the top of our page. With that said, let's get on with our show. All right, so as I mentioned, Tommy, today we are going to be talking about the number one three-point shooter in Lakers history and what his future after this season may look like as a Laker, as not a Laker. And I'm talking about Mr. D'Angelo Russell. He went from having his starting spot potentially stolen by Gabe Vincent in training camp, went from being scapegoated in December by his own coach and benched for the most futile month of Lakers basketball ever that we're still reeling from, to being traded for every mid player you could think of on the market, from Colin Sexton to Tyus Jones to Terry Rozier to Malcolm Brogdon, DFS, Royce O'Neal, you name it. He went from all of that to being called an empty stats player who never steps up in big games and never comes through in clutch situations, to now, of course, being the single-season Lakers franchise record holder in three-pointers made with 212 threes and counting. D'Angelo Russell is also the Brooklyn Nets franchise record holder in three-pointers made in a single season as well. After last night's game against the Washington Wizards, in which he hit another four threes, D'Angelo Russell also became sixth all-time in the Lakers leaderboard for most career three-pointers as a Laker, passing KCP with 523 total three-pointers made. He now hilariously trails his former Tank Commander head coach his rookie season, Byron Scott, who sits in fifth place. Also, as you all know, D'Angelo Russell over this past weekend surpassed the 10,000-point mark of his career. He is currently shooting a career-high 42.1% from three, averaging three three-pointers made per game, which would be his second highest per-game average of his career, and only the second time in his career where he's averaged three three-pointers made per game, although he's been close before at 2.7 and 2.9. In 2024, he is averaging 21 points, 3.2 rebounds, 6.5 assists, one steal on 46% from the field and 43.7% from three, hitting 3.8 threes a game. In the new year, D'Angelo Russell has made the third most three-pointers in the league with 144 threes, behind just Dante DiVincenzo at number two and Steph Curry at number one. And of all the players who have hit at least 120 plus threes in this new year, D'Angelo Russell is second in three-point percentage with 43.7% behind just Grayson Allen, who's shooting a ridiculous 47.5% from three. And no knock on Grayson Allen, but we all know that the degree of difficulty on D'Angelo Russell's three-pointers are much higher than those on Grayson Allen's three-pointers. And Grayson Allen is largely more of a standstill three-point shooter than D'Angelo Russell, who likes to dribble, dribble, pull up, and take some of the toughest three-point shots you've ever seen and still make them. But all that to say, Tommy, D'Angelo Russell is good. He is the unheralded, scapegoated third player the Lakers have been pining for. And needless to say, he has outplayed his $17.6 million contract this season and will likely be looking for a pay raise this offseason. So with all that said, where do you stand on what D'Angelo Russell's summer could look like? Is he going to re-sign with the Lakers? Is he going to another team for more money? Will he shock the world and opt in to his player option? A lot will be determined, obviously, by his playoff performance if the Lakers manage to get there. But as things currently stand, what do we do now with D'Angelo Russell? And if the Lakers are open to bringing D'Lo back, which it seems like they are for right now, what number and how many years would you land on for his next deal?
I don't think he's going to opt in. I mean, I hope he opts in, but it would be kind of foolish because this was like what he was playing for, right? It's like, I think this was kind of, it's like you see these situations go, the bet on yourself situations go both ways. In D'Lo's case, it like, I think is going to ultimately pay off for him greatly. I think he would stay. I just don't, and this is also kind of hard to know without knowing how much some of these other teams like have to throw around, because like, you could get a random team who could jump in here and throw this dude like $30, $35 million per year, right? Like that is a possibility if a team is just like, we want a guy to come in and score 22 a night and hit threes and play point guard for us. Like, you know, I don't know. I guess you could see that. So that kind of makes it hard. I think, you know, when we got D'Lo, people were saying 25 to 30 per year is what was going to be his market in free agency. Obviously, we got him for like 17. So we got like a huge, huge discount on what we thought. If we can get him somewhere in the 25 range, it's like funny how people forget. I think most people like going into the playoffs last year were sort of happy like if we could keep him in the 25 range. Mm-hmm. If we can keep him for that after like what he's done this season, which would still be like a almost 50% raise over like what he's getting paid this year, like to me that would be amazing and it would work for all parties. I even wonder if there's something you can do like for purposes of helping your cap next season, like especially with LeBron, you know, still going to be on the team obviously, and the rumors of his like crazy extension, like kind of kicking the can down the road a little bit and trying to arrange like some sort of opt-in and extend, like maybe he opts in and then we give him 2 years, 50 or you know, something like that to, or 3 years, 75 to like tack on to the end after his opt-in, like that could be, you know, something that could be interesting, but something in the average annual range of 25 million to me feels very, very reasonable. And D'Lo is still young. He's entering the prime of his career now. I don't think this is going to be an immovable contract, especially if we do like a 2-3 year deal. It's like sort of the same thing with some of the contracts we signed like over this past season, right? It's like people are always trying to be at like the opposite ends of the extremes. Like everybody needs to be long-term. Everybody needs to be on 1 year deals, so we maximize flexibility. And the reality is somewhere in between is probably best. Like you sign D'Lo to a 3 year deal, like one of those deals is going to be LeBron for sure. You already have AD locked in long-term. So maybe D'Lo ends up with one season post LeBron and then you could trade him, like, and then he'll be expiring soon. I don't know. It's like you start to feel like these 2-3 year deals are really not that restrictive, especially when you already are committed to LeBron and AD. And I just like, to me, I can't see another player who's making $25 million who's going to be able to be as effective as a third option as D'Lo. And, you know, with the kind of nuance to his game that allows him to take a step back if guys like Austin and Rui like end up stepping up in, you know, in their roles, and they're supposed to be part of this team, right, long term. And if they start to like develop to a point where they can handle more usage, or slash we need them to take on more usage, then D'Lo has that kind of adaptability too. And it's like you look at the guys that people are considering to be upgrades here, and we're talking not 10 million more those guys are making, not over what D'Lo is currently making. Like we're talking like 10 million, 15 million over that 25 million mark, right? Is like what the like guys like Zach LaVine, Trae Young, and like all those types of guys are getting paid. So again, when you're looking at it like a dollar per impact, you know, sort of analysis, like I to me, it's D'Lo just makes a lot of sense around that number if we can do it.
He does, and Terry Rozier is making the same amount of money, $24 million, and D'Angelo Russell is a better player than Terry Rozier. He just is, and people consider Terry Rozier's contract right now a good contract.
They traded a first-round pick for it.
They traded a first-round pick for Terry Rozier, which is crazy. Now, are you, I mean, obviously, I know the stance that you're taking here, but it's so funny that there are a lot of people, not a lot, but there are some very vocal people in Lakers land who at the trade deadline, Tommy, they feared that the Lakers, they feared this scenario of D'Angelo Russell just walking and the Lakers not being able to get anything out of D'Angelo Russell. And that's why they were pushing so hard to just make a trade, trade D'Angelo Russell, use his salary, attach the 2029 first if you have to, D'Lo 2029 first for Royce O'Neal, Dorian Finney-Smith, just so that we can retain guys on longer term deals. Tell me why you were never that worried about the prospects of D'Angelo Russell walking. For me, I mean, okay, there is something to be said, Tommy, about D'Angelo Russell still is playing nice here. He's still high-fiving Darvin Ham, his coach, sometimes. But there is something to be said about the way that Darvin Ham has misutilized him and scapegoated him this season, and whether or not that will have an impact on whether D'Angelo Russell would want to return. Because again, it only takes one team to be like, hey, D'Lo, we'll give you $30 million. Can you help so-and-so develop on our team for like 2 years? Now, granted, D'Angelo Russell seems like he's a Lakers fan, Mikey, and loves it in LA, so that goes in our favor. But do any of those worry you at all? Factors?
I think D'Lo wants to be in LA. And so I think if we're in the ballpark, he'll stay here. I think the off the court, like, and like any extraneous factor other than that, like tangible guaranteed money, that's stuff that could change like day to day. You know what I mean? A coach can get fired, a front office can shift, players, other players on the team can get traded. But I think the two things that we know are like, or the one thing that we know is D'Lo likes being in LA. He has a family. He's like a, you know, he's got at least one kid. I don't know if he has two. He's got like a wife. Like he's got like a life here now. I think his family wants to be here. Like these are factors for people, particularly for people who are not like, you know, wired the same way LeBron is or like Kobe was, where it's like it's solely like winning and nothing else matters in the world except basketball. Like D'Lo has like, that's not him. Like he's got things going on. And so being in LA could be a factor as long as, you know, provided we are in the ballpark what other teams are offering. So, I provided we're willing to go there, I think we have a pretty good shot.
Yeah. And do you agree with me that I feel like the people who have painted it as bad asset management to keep D'Lo throughout this season instead of trading him tend to forget that teams wanted you to attach assets on top of D'Lo to get rid of D'Lo in the first place. So it's not like if we had made a D'Lo trade at the trade deadline, okay, yay, we get Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith for however long their contracts last. But we gave up the 2029 first to do that. You know, like I would rather see D'Angelo Russell try and redeem himself the rest of the season. And even if he walks, okay, it's funny that people paint this as, oh, D'Angelo Russell's just going to walk. Like the Lakers front office, regardless of how dubious you are of them, as if the Lakers front office doesn't know this, Tommy, that they're just going to let D'Angelo Russell walk with no contingency plan. Like, you don't think that if Rob Pelinka had held on to D'Angelo Russell like he did this trade deadline, that he is not aware of all of the scenarios that exist, including the fact that we have his bird rights, that we can offer him the most amount of money, that even if we let him go to someone else, that's probably because we have a contingency plan to trade for Trae Young or something like that, or Donovan Mitchell. So speak on that a little bit and why you were never, I'm guessing you were never worried about that scenario of like, oh, this is bad asset management with D'Lo.
Yeah, the bad asset management thing is silly, right? Yeah, the first point, which just throws it all in the trash right off the bat, is what you said at first, which is like, it wasn't just like people wanted to attach assets to D'Lo to get like these other scrub players that we don't need, right? So that's one factor, but you know, a contract like this was not just a $17 million, like in a vacuum contract we gave D'Angelo Russell. There's like a lot of considerations here. Number one, he might actually opt in. Is it likely to happen? No, but things have happened. Like, you know, it's not like totally outside of the realm of possibility that he might opt in. Is it below market? Sure, but we're not talking about this dude opting into like a $2 million deal. Like he's still going to get paid $19 million next year. And the contracts we're talking about are like $25 million.
Are you afraid of the scenario where he opts in because he had another bad playoff series? Because even in that scenario, Tommy, it's like, okay, well, we know what he can do in the regular season.
Exactly.
He's on an expiring contract now, which means he's more tradable.
We have to get through 82 games. It feels like sometimes we're the only people talking about this as we go through like another season where we're like struggling for play-in positioning. Like, you still, does it matter at the end of the day when you have LeBron and AD and you've been working through injuries, like where 1 through 10 you line up? I guess like it doesn't really matter under the argument that you have to beat everyone to get to the finals anyway. But there's no denying that there are easier paths and more difficult paths, right? And so anyway, we know D'Lo can put us in the right position during the regular season, which is a factor. And so who cares? He opts in, it's 18, 19 million, like a starting caliber point guard who just put up a season like this, who can hit multiple threes a game. I mean, $4 million more than what Luke Kennard gets paid at this point. Like this is like, this is what we're talking about. You know what I mean? I mean, it's crazy. So I just
Jones, baby.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you know, that I get that people are like, well, yeah, he could just walk, but we're in the driver's seat. Like we have his bird rights. That's like another factor.
Why isn't
forget.
That publicized more? We are in the driver's seat. They didn't just keep D'Angelo Russell and say, you know what? This is bad asset management. Let's do it.
Yeah. Like we, first of all, we meaning like Rob and the front office know much better than any of us fans or media members, like what those initial conversations have looked like with D'Lo's team about the future, if any. They know best what the market is shaping up to look like this summer in terms of like what are other free agent point guards going to get. Like there are so many data points that we don't have access to, and to suggest that like we know for sure D'Lo will opt out and go to another team regardless, like it just feels like silly. Is it a risk? Yeah, I mean it's a risk. We could sign him to a very market friendly deal and he has a career ending injury. Why are we like speculating about these like outside possibilities and not focusing more on like what is actually most likely to happen? I'm not saying it's most likely to happen that he's going to opt in, but it's most likely to be the case that we will be in the driver's seat because we have his bird rights. we have the connection with him and we know, we will know what his market is. So we can make him a fair offer. The fact that, like, people are acting like we can make him a fair offer and he can still walk, as though that is like as likely as him accept. I mean, it's like, we don't know, right? It's like, it's like he, we could also just make him a fair offer and he accepts. And the point is, like, we had, like, it's not, he's not a restricted free agent, obviously, but like, we can match and like, not like we don't have to, you know what I mean? It's not like the ability to match, like, it is in a restricted context, but like, we can go up to a max level NBA contract for this guy if we wanted to, and it not be a salary cap issue because of we have his bird rights. So that makes it easier for us to retain him. And for some reason, people are like not talking about that.
Well, it was there's risks on both ends of the argument, right? There was also a risk that if we traded D'Angelo Russell in a 2029 first for Royce O'Neal and Dorian Finney-Smith, that is the move that tanks our season, Tommy, because D'Angelo Russell has been so integral to the chemistry, the locker room chemistry of the team, you know, notwithstanding the fact that you just traded your best non-LeBron James playmaker for, you know, upgraded versions of Torian Prince and Cam Reddish. And what are you going to do now? Let Austin Reeves continue to and one streetball things into oblivion, you know, like, as good as Austin Reeves is? Like, if we're talking about win now dynamics with LeBron James, how is Dorian Finney-Smith and Royce O'Neal more of a win now than D'Angelo Russell, you know, given the context of our season and everything that D'Angelo Russell has meant to the team, not only on the court, but off the court? And yeah, to your point, everything you said about the offseason and his options are correct. We're not talking about like a 22-year-old D'Angelo Russell who just wants to spread his wings and fly, you know, and will take $30 million from the Detroit Pistons to do that. You know, he's at a different stage of his life. He wants to actually wants stability. He wants to be in a place where the fans actually appreciate him. And if that's LA, he's going to stay here if we give him a fair offer. Now, the thing that could derail that, Tommy, is if Darvin Ham benches him again at the most inopportune time in the playoffs and scapegoats him again. If that happens, yes, I would be a little bit more worried, but I would hope that the front office is like, hey, Darvin, can you quit the bullshit? Because we need to retain this guy, even if it's just as an asset, or else we lose everything, or we don't get anything for him. So hopefully they mend those things. And Tommy, I mentioned this to you offline, but if it comes down to D'Angelo Russell and Darvin Ham, and D'Angelo Russell tells the front office, I will resign with you guys for 3 years, but Darvin Ham has to go. And behind the scenes, D'Angelo Russell is secretly the reason why the front office fires Darvin Ham, then D'Angelo Russell is the GOAT point guard. That's it. Hands down. D'Angelo Russell is the GOAT point guard for getting Darvin Ham out of here. Okay, so why don't we take it to break here? When we come back, let's talk about the hypothetical scenario in which D'Angelo Russell does re-sign with the Lakers and what that means for the rest of the roster and his skill guard pairing with Austin Reeves. So let's take it to break and we'll catch you guys after the turn.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, so we are back. Before we jump back into our D'Angelo Russell future outlook talk, to keep things a bit fresh and relevant for this episode, I have some quick updated stats to share with you guys regarding this Lakers team after their most recent road trip in which they finished 5-1. So over the Lakers' last 9 games, where they finished 8-1, the Lakers are leading the NBA in points per game, averaging 123.3 points. They are also number 1 in pace and number 1 in free throws made as well. I'm sure opposing fans will have a lot of fun with that stat, but honestly, with Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Rui Hachimura on your team, the Lakers deserve more free throws, let's be real. Lastly, the Lakers are also number 3 in true shooting percentage, so they have really been firing on all cylinders offensively. With regards to advanced stats, the Lakers are 10th in offensive rating, but here's the most surprising part. The Lakers in the last 9 games are actually 5th in defensive rating. So their defense has actually really picked it up in this last stretch. So it hasn't just been all about their offensive dominance. So yeah, the Lakers have really turned it up at just the right time. It seems like they're firing on all cylinders. The starting lineup continues to put up bonkers individual numbers, and we are on our way home. Unfortunately, the rest of the West is keeping pace, so hopefully some of these teams that are ahead of the Lakers start to fall off so we can see some actual fruition in the strides that the Lakers have made in terms of their record and their overall play. But anyways, let's get back into our D'Angelo Russell talk and what his re-signing with the Lakers means for the future construction of this team. Tommy, in the scenario in which D'Angelo Russell is re-signed and Austin Reaves is obviously still here, what now? Is this backcourt a sustainable backcourt without so heavily relying on a Jared Vanderbilt type player to knit them together? Like, am I crazy? And I don't want to just ship Austin Reaves out, but am I crazy to think that we should, I want to use my words carefully here, Tommy. Am I crazy to say that I think we should be building around D'Angelo Russell more in the sense that he should be more of a core key player of ours as opposed to the one that we've just been willy-nilly like TBD on D'Lo. We don't know if he's hot, he's hot, but he's not really in our plans. Obviously, if they re-sign him to a longer deal, you would hope that would be the case, but you never know, right? But I think if we re-sign D'Angelo Russell, we have to be open to the fact, and this is something we've been saying all season, we have to be open to the scenario of bringing Austin Reaves off the bench as Manu Ginobili. That is always his comp. Why don't we literally put him in that situation so that both can thrive? And if you are insistent on keeping these two together in the starting lineup, then maybe we need to make a margin trade with our expirings next year because, you know, Hayes, Wood, Cam Reddish will be expiring if they all pick up their player options. Maybe tack on Gabe Vincent on top of that if you need more salary balance. Maybe we make that other margin move to help support Austin Reaves and D'Angelo Russell. But I think for me, I don't think it's necessarily sustainable to have both of these guys as your two starting point guards. So it's either you shift Austin Reaves to the bench or you make an ancillary trade on the margins to further bolster your Jared Vanderbilt support of both of these guys. And then here's the third option, Tommy. The third option is, and it's not an option that I willy-nilly want to go to, but the third option is maybe you trade Austin Reaves because he is the asset that other teams covet anyways. And I don't know what that deal would look like, but presumably, what if the Nets say, okay, we'll give you Mikal Bridges for Austin Reaves, Rui Hachimura, salary balance, JHS, 2029, 2030, whatever we can trade. And then you have a core of D'Angelo Russell, Mikal Bridges, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, whatever. That is the scenario that I'm not necessarily like longing for. But yeah, where do you stand on, okay, D'Angelo Russell's back on the team. What now with him and Austin Reaves?
So, I mean, I will take it your craziness a step further and say that, like, I even suggested that, like, during the game or before the game against the Bucks, right, or, like, as D'Lo is, I probably suggested this a few times as D'Lo has been on this like, super hot stretch over the last, like, 2-3 months, but, like, we should even be running more of the offense through D'Lo, like, right now, right? It's, like, yes. like building around D'Lo long-term over Austin is one thing, but right now, the focal point should be more D'Lo than it is a lot of nights. But I think there's like a few ways the Austin thing and the Austin situation could work. I think the big one and the one that will hopefully ultimately end up working for us, it's just that we haven't been able to realize it, is just getting that elite three to play next to these two guys who can defend on the perimeter. And we have that guy and he's locked in long-term and it's Jared Vanderbilt. And I mean, honestly, even Gabe Vincent, I mean, you could start him with D'Lo, you could say, but Jared Vanderbilt, I think makes the most sense and cleans up a lot of the issues. Now, ideally you have a wing who can defend a little bit and hit some shots, but then you just replace Austin with like maybe a more realized version of Max Christie is what people are like hoping for in that spot, like a bigger two guard who can really, really lock in defensively and hit some threes and doesn't really need the ball. I still think my first way of getting this to all work is you know, every season these guys leave and they have their end of the season meetings with the coaches and they kind of get their reviews for the year. I mean, I guess like sort of like we do in all of our jobs, and they get like goals for next year. If Austin comes back and can just be like an average defensive player and not like one of the worst defensive players in the NBA, I think that cleans up a lot of this. I think like the clunkiness of, you know, sometimes it feeling like we're running too much through Austin and not enough through D'Lo, I think that can be, particularly like with new contracts and new kind of roles kind of planted in these guys' minds when you come into the season in training camp. Like if it's D'Lo on a new contract and he was our guy and that was like their big free agent pickup, it's different than like D'Lo came into camp as like an afterthought and like Austin
as a tradable contract.
Yeah, as a tradable contract. Like he kind of signed this half-assed deal like at the last minute that nobody expected him to sign, and Austin was the real prize and he played in Team USA and everybody was all excited about it. So it's like those types of things have like an impact on these guys, right? Like it would have, if it have an impact on anybody. I mean, you at your job, me at my job, like if some new guy came in and they were like, yeah, this is the guy we're all excited about, and then like everyone started to stop talking about you, you know. So it's like those are natural things. So it's like you come in next season, it's D'Lo's the guy. If they can tell Austin just like focus on defense, you try and maybe ball handling, but like you try to up your ball handling a little bit from last season. The shooting has gotten a little bit more consistent, certainly as the season has gone on. Like Austin has made strides in his game, make strides this offseason defensively, and I think you could still get away with those two guards. I think like ultimately for me, what is going to make a D'Lo team work long term, if we're keeping LeBron AD, which we are, and we want to keep Austin, this is like really tough to say, but I think the odd man out is ultimately going to end up being Rui. I think he has the best combination of like, he makes enough money after the season. He only has 2 years left on his deal at a pretty reasonable value for like how efficient he can be offensively and how strong he can be. I think, you know, particularly if we end up keeping our pick this year, like in other words, like the Pelicans have the ability to defer, right? So if we end up keeping our own pick, I could see like Rui and that pick be shopped for like an elite, like a DeAndre Hunter, like that caliber of, you know, style of player to just be our consistent starting three. You know, if people think that like Jared Vanderbilt long term, he's got health concerns, or maybe offensively it's not going to get there, like I could see something like that working out. But personally, I would just run it back with a healthy team and see how it works before I would jump to anything like that.
I have a name for you. You said DeAndre Hunter. Yeah, that's a good option. I think the Mikal Bridges stuff is obviously too lofty and the Nets will want too much. Yeah. But I do have a name for you. Whether it's Rui that you're using or you're piling up together, you know, expiring salary ballast or whatever, I do think Jared Vanderbilt can help tide things over in the meantime. But ideally, I would love Jared Vanderbilt to be the off the bench guy who provides the energy. And we already have an established pretty much what Darvinham thinks Taurean Prince is, like, ideally, you know, the Chris Middleton mold or whatever. Ideally, we have that guy, but not Taurean Prince. And then Jared Vanderbilt helps bolster that player in light of, you know, D'Lo and Austin Reeves' athletic speed deficiencies. But this guy actually came to mind. He's also on the same team as Mikal Bridges. But if you can get a Cam Johnson for Rui Hachimura and some picks, or some expirings and picks for Cam Johnson, the Lakers should absolutely do that. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cam Johnson, solid defender, good length, knockdown shooter. Like, that is the perfect archetype. Like, the prime version of Taurean Prince with more upside is what you're looking for. Now, I'll take it one step further, Tommy, and say, am I crazy to say that? Let's talk about Trae Young, because the Lakers are all in on Trae Young, right? I don't think people have outlined what it means to get Trae Young yet, because in order for the Lakers to trade for Trae Young, Tommy, that means D'Angelo Russell didn't re-sign with us because they need a key. They can't be this like over the top, like luxury tax repeater to that extent. You know, at a certain point, the costs get exorbitant. You're at the second apron. And when you're at the second apron, you can't even do anything functionally as a front office to make moves anymore. So I like, realistically, if the Lakers get Trae Young, that means D'Angelo Russell's out the door. That also means Austin Reeves, Rui Hachimura, Max Christie, if you resign him, JHS, 2029, 2030. That means all of that is out the door as well. I really like Trae Young. I think he is like one of the best point guards in the last half decade to play this game. He has that, you know, connection with Kobe and Gigi, the Mamba mentality stuff. Like, he is the ice Trae, as they call him. So you'll have that, like, other, that next level point guard who's also has like an ice motif going on, as opposed to D'Angelo Russell, ice Trae shivering his shoulders and whatnot, hitting clutch shots. I really like Trae Young. But when I think about all that it will cost to actually get Trae Young and contrast that with having all of the depth that we have, and maybe we're always just going to be caught in this, you always need a big third star who will never waver, you know, no matter what, and is a little bit more consistent with D'Angelo Russell, even though Trae Young is a multi-time All-Star, I'm not sure what's going to happen to him as the third guy next to LeBron James and Anthony Davis, you know? And I would argue that if LeBron James just swapped the jerseys of Trae Young and D'Angelo Russell, and not saying that LeBron James doesn't trust D'Angelo Russell, but there's a pedigree that comes with these players and the perception behind them, right? And if LeBron James allowed D'Angelo Russell to your point, take control over the offense more, like, you know, LeBron James would do that with Trae Young, right? Or a guy like Damian Lillard. If he did that more with D'Angelo Russell, I think we could see more of the same output as a Trae Young or a Damian Lillard or CJ McCollum. Like, all of these guys that we talk about with in such a high light because they're so consistent. If the Lakers did that with D'Angelo Russell, he could be one of those guys. It's just perception hasn't caught up. Perception and narratives haven't caught up with who D'Angelo Russell actually is and can be in the right context. So am I crazy to say that I'm not sure about Trae Young in the context of everything we're giving up for him?
I don't think that's crazy at all.
Why?
I don't think that's crazy because it's like you get back to like, I mean, it's like an elevated version of the Westbrook problem, but it's like you see this three-star thing happen around the league and it's like it's happened. Remember how hyped everyone was about the Suns before the season started? I mean, they might lose tonight and be in the play-in with us, you know? So it's like, when you have a team that's built around three stars, those guys better be playing. Like, the reason the Miami thing worked was because LeBron James was putting out the output of, like, five guys. He was in the prime of his career. Yeah. He was playing, like, you know, five guys in one, and he was playing, like, almost every game, you know what I mean? And it's like, Dwayne Wade, same thing, and obviously Bosh. And so it's like, that's why those teams were able to work and that work well enough during the season to get to the postseason and then turn it on to the extra gear. I think the problem is when you have 40-year-old LeBron James, you have AD who's coming off at like a healthy season, and I don't want to jinx it, but it's like that doesn't bode well for next season, looking at how his career has gone. And you can't be like gutting the entire rest of your team's depth to put it all on Trae Young or some third star, because then it's like you're playing the next 2 years like just, again, kind of scraping by, like hoping that Trae Young can like win you some random games while, you know, you have your other two stars are out of the lineup.
Yeah, and again, this isn't to say that I think you would agree. Trae Young can carry a team better, yes, at this stage than D'Angelo Russell, right? But then you tack on top of it everything else that's going out, not the least of which Tommy Lee's future first-round picks, potential lottery picks that we also need to stem the tide. Like, we can't, we're going to be like the Bulls, Tommy, if we don't have any young prospects that we can hold on to. Luckily, they kind of saw the progression this late of, not, I don't want to say late, but they've seen Kobe White rise into the status of being one of those guys. But we can't be an in-between team again with Trae Young and Anthony Davis and not have any young prospects and kind of just go bargain bin hunting, although maybe you'd argue that it's a good thing because the Lakers do well with undrafted free agents and second round picks or whatever. But yeah, all that to say, the Lakers should probably re-sign D'Angelo Russell to a fair market deal, go from there, and have a more unified vision of what it looks like if D'Angelo Russell is actually part of your plans versus like a willy-nilly afterthought. You know, because that doesn't do your team any service. It doesn't do the player in D'Angelo Russell any service. It's just the fact that D'Angelo Russell has had the metal and relentlessness this season to kind of force people into being like, hey, maybe we should actually factor this guy into our plans, you know? So from our end, the Lakers hopefully re-sign From our end, hopefully the Lakers re-sign D'Angelo Russell to a fair deal of 2 to 3 years, and they figure out the jigsaw puzzle of what to do with their skill guards, whether it's to stagger them starting-wise off the bench, we know who should be starting, or whether it's to make an ancillary trade to further bolster that defensive wing template that can help uplift them, or whether it's to trade the other guy. We'll see. All right, so that should do it for today's episode. The 6 through 10 playoff / play-in race in the West is absolutely bonkers right now, so keep your butt cheeks clenched and buckle up. We shall hopefully be back next week to kick off the Lakers' final few games and talk about what their inevitable play-in fate may look like, so stay tuned for that. As usual, please follow us on Twitter at Lakers Legacy Pod. Please also rate and review us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast app, or give us a 5-star thumb tap on the Spotify platform as well. If you would like to donate a buck or two to help keep this operation going and save me from starving, please visit our Patreon page, patreon.com/thelakerslegacypodcast, and be a Patreon contributor today. We throw in some exclusive content on that page from time to time as well. But apart from all that, thank you guys for your support. Thank you all for listening. We will catch you guys next time. And Tommy, I will see you later.
Peace.
Laters.